My name is...
How you doing?
Hey. My name's Brian Madden. I'm coming from San Francisco. That was Gabe you heard. I noticed wearing your Ohio State gear.
My wife makes fun of me because she thinks it's all I have. she may be right.
You're right. She's making fun of you because that's all you have or because that's...
Well, she knows better than I do because she does the laundry. So I don't really... I just reach in and grab a shirt. So...
joining also from San Francisco is Jack Madden.
Good morning, Brian. Good morning, Paul.
Paul.
And Paul.
So we got Paul. My childhood friend Paul is in the office. He also he's got the week off work, so we're getting lunch together today. So he came in early. Paul helped us out with those Brian versus Brian videos. If you remember those things we did for Citrix Online, so he's in this sort of
he's in the credits there as our as our consultant.
Yeah, he's sort of in the film media movie business.
I'm looking because Paul is actually in that photo that we took in 1999 and photoshopped us into that group of Microsoft.
Oh,
do you remember this photo? The photo goes around his email. It says Microsoft in 1976, and the tagline is something like, "Would you have invested in these guys?" And it shows all of these guys, you know, 35 years ago. And so one day we got a hold of this in 1999, and somebody had a, you know, $1,000 digital camera, and Paul was the guy that knew Photoshop, and he was interning for us at the time. So we all, you know, snickered and took photos of four of us, and then Paul spent the rest of the afternoon getting paid to Photoshop us into the corners of this photo. And I'm looking for that because we can post it to the Facebook page or
Facebook
something
page
like that.
Page right now? Yeah, I'm looking through that. yeah. Oh my gosh, that's good call. So also joining us from the Netherlands is Rodney Medina. I guess to you, Rodney, good afternoon.
Good evening, even.
Oh, yeah. Where are you at this exact moment?
I am in Amsterdam in the Imedio office.
Okay, cool. And so Rodney is the CTO of Imedio, and Imedio is the software company that spun off of Login Consultants. Login Consultants, many people know from creating, they had the Login VSI benchmarking utilities. Jeroen van de Kamp, one of our 10-time Briform speakers, is at Login and created sort of Flex Profile Kit back in the day. And Login, I know, created lots of different tools, and Imedio spun off from Login, was it, Rodney, now 3-4 years ago?
Yeah, we started Imedio in 2008. First of all, we started off as a branch of Login Consultants. But, a year later, we really split from Login. And I actually worked at Login Consultants for 6 years when we started Imedio. So I was responsible for the whole productizing of all those tools that Login these days even provide to the community. But I was actually one of the people that left Login to commercialize Flex Profiles. Yeah.
And you are also, you're a Microsoft MVP in AppV.
In AppV, yeah.
And you've been the speaker of Briform in the past also, I know.
Yeah, I think I visited twice already as a speaker. And I will be there next month as well in London again. So the last couple of years was quite busy, especially from a media standpoint. But it was time to submit some sessions again. So
and what
it's
are your
cool
sessions,
to be there next month.
What are your sessions for Briform?
The contents will be changed because, of course, we can now publicly talk about AppV5 and also UEV. We, as the MVPs, we already knew for that quite a while, but we were not allowed to talk about that, as you know. but since it's open, I will definitely discuss AppV5 as well from a personalization perspective. So the session will be mostly about AppV and how it handles the personalization of user settings.
And so let's talk about that, because that's actually kind of why we've got you on the show today. So Microsoft announced AppV version 5, and... which is not out yet, right? It's just been announced.
Yeah, it's just a public beta made available a couple of weeks ago, 2-3 weeks ago. And there's no time frame yet. But normally it's not too long after a major milestone release of Windows comes out. So probably within a couple of months of Windows, after the Windows 8 release, AppV5 will be publicly available, I guess. Yeah.
And then also Microsoft announced that user environment virtualization, I think UEV, which is, we spent some time talking about that last week, and I know you have some opinions on that, but I wonder, can you give us like 30 seconds on AppV5? So I haven't really been following AppV. 5, that's a major release. So what's new about at V5? Is there anything that you as an MVP are excited about?
Yeah, I am. I think it's a really big release because since Microsoft acquired the Softricity company and the SoftGrid product in 2006, not a lot of architectural changes have been made to the product. Practically every piece of code has been changed now with the LPV5 release. So from a functional perspective, there's quite a lot of new features that people will like. But I think the real exciting thing is that it's really been built up from scratch with all the knowledge and experience for the last 10 years of using the old architecture, if I might call it that now. So I think the biggest change will be for people is that the integration of the applications with the local operating system have been much improved, because AppV, the way we know it now, might be isolating it a little bit too much. So the shell extensions people are used to when you virtualize like WinRAR or WinZip and stuff like that, all the right-click options you have, those were all not available capabilities in UPV 4.6 and below. And with UPV 5, that will be a lot more open. So I think the integration is the biggest change people will notice, actually.
That's a double-edged sword, right? Because if they open up more, doesn't that mean that more applications could potentially conflict with each other?
Well, it's still virtualized. It's just less isolated. So the virtual applications with UPV 4.6 and lower are virtualized, but they're also isolated a lot from the local operating system. So you can now much more see the virtual application bits actually being on your local system, but they're still not touching System 32 or your actual registry locations. So it's not an issue on a conflict level, no.
So let me ask you quickly, Microsoft Office, the number one question people ask is, should they virtualize Office in AppV or add it to the base?
Yeah, so are you asking for my opinion or if it's... yeah, so that's always a very heavy discussion at, customers mostly, and also with the product team within Microsoft, because it all depends. I mean, the way probably you and I use Office, for us, it's just a primary productivity tool. We start Word, we start Outlook, and so on. We use it really basically. But in the enterprise, there's a lot of applications integrate with Office. So the more integration you will have with Microsoft Office, the more issues you might run into if you're starting to virtualize Office. So it will be much better with the next release of UPV 5. But my personal opinion still is make it a part of the base, because it's Office. It doesn't have conflicts. It's really neatly installable, upgradable, maintainable. So, and everyone will use it in the entire company. So why would you virtualize it anyway?
Really, right. Like, I mean, when you look at sort of baseline platform, really, where does Windows end and Office begin? It's just part of It's just part of your base image. I like that.
Yeah, we have a session. Aaron Parker is giving we're having a discussion, I guess, as part of our lightning rounds about that, whether or not it should be. So what's that?
Moving on also, now we talked 2 weeks ago about this Microsoft User Environment Virtualization. Do I have that right? It's UEV.
No, it's User Experience Virtualization. Oh, okay. That's the actual name.
Microsoft would love to make the user experience completely separate from the device.
We'll start virtualizing the users and everything will be okay, I guess.
They don't even know they're not using an Apple. And so you listened to the show 2 weeks ago, Rodney. Did we, first of all, our characterization of UEV was that it's used to put user personalization settings. So it takes registry settings for the user, but sort of injects them when they launch an application, right? So you can have a generic copy of Windows with a generic instance of Word and launch it, and it'll sort of pop the user settings in right as Word is launching, and then...
Yep. That's true.
When the user closes out a Word, it pulls them back out again. Is that is correct? Like, that's what UEV does?
No, not completely. It depends on how you imagine pulling it out. So what they do is they inject the personal settings into the application you're starting, but they are actually injecting it into the real registry or your real profile. And when they export it, they don't clean it up. They do leave it behind in your actual roaming or local profile.
Okay, so...
So they capture the changes you've made, or, well, they capture everything that you've configured it to export and import, and they do it on the fly. So it is, like Gabe mentioned 2 weeks ago, it is much more sticking to the actual applications instead of loading all those settings at log on and log off. But they're not redirecting or really capturing it from the profile. So the registry tattooing is still happening.
Okay, so I think
so. Is going there? Good. Well, so the way I pictured it was much like Flex Profiles, where you could essentially get rid of roaming profiles, use a mandatory profile, and then have those settings imported and saved off at the end of a session. Is that so? Are you saying that we still need regular read write savable profiles, roaming profiles, to use UEV?
Yeah, because it doesn't cover the complete base. You still have to, there's no way in Windows to work without a base profile. You need one of those three, right? So even in Windows 8, the mandatory local and roaming profiles are still considerations. And there are even going to be changes made to Windows 8 to be able to configure the profile settings for users even easier. And I will actually add that to my session for next month, because there's some nice stuff coming in Windows 8 on the configuration level. But yeah, it's still Windows. It's still a profile that needs to be loaded. You can use it with in conjunction with a mandatory profile, but then still, okay. You need to configure a lot of settings. But what I've seen of UEV up until now is, on an application level, it can cover pretty much everything you want. But on a Windows OS level, it's not capable of managing all the Windows settings.
And that's because it works only in HKEY current user, right?
Only within the profile, I guess. No, it has to. Yeah, that's true. But it also has to do with timing. So when they log on, importing, like for instance, the multi-language interface of Windows is too late. And within Imedio Flex, we actually have a specific feature making sure that we can cover all settings that are available in any type of profile.
And that sort of leads to my question, which you know, when we talked about UEV 2 weeks ago, we sort of mentioned that, okay, so this is a sort of a more basic thing. Probably companies like AppSense and Res Software are fine, but maybe the little more point solutions like Imedio Flex, maybe that's a competition. And it sounds like this is, you're addressing some of the differences. And we'll give you this shot right here. So now's your opportunity as a CTO of Imedio, be fully commercial. You know, tell us why Imedio Flex, and this sounds like a
hard-ass challenge. Answer.
I don't mean it sound that way, but like so you know, if people are see UAV and they're like, oh, Microsoft is solving this, you know, what's missing there that Imedio Flex even, you know, provides?
Yeah, within Imedio, we of course have overlap in functionality with UAV, but that goes the same for the other companies in the market space as well. So UEV popping up in the market is actually, it's a good thing, and it's also a bad thing, because vendors like us, we have to explain more to customers if they have seen Flex profiles in the past, of course, because then their overlap is almost 100%. The good thing is that Microsoft is actually really validating the market space itself. So people are starting to look at UEV, and then they probably, depending on the scenario, they want more functionality. So if you look at the overlap that UEV has with Imedio Flex, is the personalization part. And Imedio in the past, like people have been using it in big Citrix environments, was all about personalization. Like Gabe mentioned, using mandatory profiles combined with roaming capabilities provided by Flex. But we really went beyond that as soon as we started the Imedio company. So we had, that was actually the reason why we started Imedio. I mean, people were really asking from the community for a lot of features and a lot of enhancements, but it was simply not, we were not capable to do that from a consulting point of view. So that's, we had a lot of ideas when we started Imedio from the start. So we're more moving towards the user environment management as a whole, and especially the release that will be available in 2 months. You will see that it's not only the importing and exporting of personal settings, but we will be able to set the application state. And that's actually a feature that we have available right now. We call it application state management, where we can wizard-driven we can easily let an administrator configure an application the way he likes it for the user without even having to touch the registry or doing any advanced stuff, and then easily push it out to any user, any environment, any type of profile they might be using. And the nice thing of the application state management is that on an application level, you can actually put that application in a solid state, meaning that even if I have a roaming profile, each time I launch the application, it will behave the way the IT department wants it. And for some applications, that's actually a very nice feature to have. But yeah, I think it's really, as soon as we started introducing a mechanism that we call Direct Flex, which is actually comparable with what UEV does, managing the application setting when an application launches instead of the log on and log off moment. So that's actually one of the capabilities that a lot of people are not aware of that Imedio has these days. So we built on top of that. So we can actually now manage a printer when you start an application. We can detach the printer when you close the application. We can set your OWBC connection when you start an application, and so on. So we really started building on top of the base functionality we released in our first commercial release from Imedio Flex.
All right, and Rodney and I have a date set later this week with the WebEx, and we're going to sort of dig into that because I haven't looked at Imedio Flex in some time. And I guess, Rodney, yep, it was probably, I don't know, when I was last in Amsterdam and we had dinner together, that was 6 months ago now, I guess, so it's been a little while. I've got that. I've got that set, and we will take a look at Imedio in a few days, and I'll sort of share the findings that you guys are working
on. That's not on my calendar. Let me know when that is.
Oh.
I'll shoot it and invite you guys later. There's one thing that I really short that I wanted to mention, that one of the unique things that we are capable of doing these days is that we can actually migrate application versions back and forth. So we are actually capable of roaming your personal settings between, let's say, Office 2007 on Windows XP and Office 2010 on Windows 7. So that's not only capturing the personalization, because from our perspective these days that's easy to do, but we introduced a mechanism where we can translate certain application settings. And it's completely open, so people can customize that for their own custom applications as well.
Do you think you will be able to do that for Windows RT?
Well, that all depends on what applications can we install on Windows RT, I guess. Yeah. So we've had that question a lot. We have had that question a lot, and I'm really also continuously digging into the whole Windows RT and the store and what capabilities ISVs will have actually on that device, because my belief it's going to be pretty limited.
Okay, so let's talk about that. And the voice you're hearing is Rodney Medina, CTO of Imedio, joining us from Amsterdam, and also we've got Gabe in Omaha, and Jack and me, Brian Madden, in San Francisco.
Sure.
And incidentally, in the chat room, Flippy the Clown, who is actually a known person on our site, asked about the recent SkyDrive upgrade, Google Drive, Dropbox real competition. I'm feeling like that's a conversation for Jack for your show on Thursday.
Yeah. Well, The answer is I haven't taken too close of a look at either one. I'm waiting to see what the question seems to be, will it be a replacement for Dropbox? And the answer is possibly, if it does that completely effortless integration that Dropbox does for me.
Yeah, and so your show, give yourself a plug, it's Consumerization Nation.
So that's Consumerization Nation, episode number 2, Thursday at 10 Pacific, 1 Eastern time. Colin Steele is my co-conspirator on this show, and we're going to do pretty much all the same things that we do on this show, except with the consumerization stuff that we never seem to get to.
Yeah,
we have a lot to talk about this week. Blog post that I wrote yesterday inspired not one but two other blog posts.
Oh, you mean other in the world? Like where people
like other people in the world
blogged on you? And
yeah,
we're like, who the fuck is this idiot?
Yeah. It was fun.
Man, if you can't get a Wikipedia page now. okay, so we were talking about Windows RT. So I guess some of the news that came out this past, since we did the last show, was that the Windows on ARM, affectionately known as WOA, the official name for that is going to be called Windows RT, which is...
What does that mean?
Well, right. So this is weird to begin with because, they announced that Windows 8 will be called Windows 8. Windows 8 Server will be called, you know, Server 2012. Windows 8 will have... There will be Windows 8 and Windows 8 Pro. So all of those sort of branding around Windows 8. But then Windows 8 on ARM doesn't have the number 8 in it. It's just called Windows RT, which is weird because RT usually has... In computer world means real-time. But Windows 8 on ARM is not... Like a real-time OS and a solid-state OS is not the same thing. So it's right. not it's not a real-time OS. So you were at MMS. Did they say what the hell RT stands for? I'm pointing to Jack here for those of you listening.
No, they didn't. But I'm wondering, so is Metro on... Like whether it's Metro or not is not a part of this naming conversation, right? Because I was wondering what Metro on Intel or Metro on x86 is called.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, you're right. So, isn't that weird? Yeah, that's a good point. So those listening, we talked about in the past, so you know, Windows, so they're writing a version of Windows for the ARM processor-based tablets, which is going to be more lower power, kind of like almost more like iOS devices. So that's just Windows on ARM. But then there will also be x86 tablets that run the real, you know, air quote Windows 8.
Full on Windows, right?
But is that
and Windows they'll still 8? Have the traditional UI as well, like we saw. Yeah. Benny Trich had one a few weeks ago when he was here in San Francisco.
And Benny Trich is the biggest, you know, as much as there are Microsoft lovers on this planet, you know, Benny Trich is counted among their ranks, and even he was like. You know, we're starting it and it's waiting. Like you turn the tablet sideways and like 15 seconds later, it's like the screen changes.
Well, so that was like a 13-inch tablet and it was crazy because it was so big. So maybe it's just because it was so big.
I played with one.
Yeah.
Last week, I had seen Dell was a sponsor of the events that I was at, and they had brought a Dell tablet, an Intel Dell tablet with Windows 8 running on it. And yeah, I mean, you know, it was like using, you know, my Kindle Fire, right? Where you swipe and then it kind of gets there eventually, and then you try to do the things, and it's not very fluid. And I mean, you could just tell it was kind of hacked onto the device itself. So I'm sure that's what Benny was using. He wasn't actually using an HCL certified Windows 8 tablet, was he?
No, you're right. But what's funny though, yeah. So all the existing tablets, they do they don't do multi-touch. So you're touching it, but it's only tracking one finger point at a time. So it's kind of like this weird, like you don't have the precision of a mouse because you're using your like stupid fat finger, but you also don't have the luxury of multiple fingers. So like what right. makes using your fingers nice is that you can use multiple fingers. But there's no, I mean, a lot of, and even actually the most recent Windows 7 multi-touch, so Windows 7 supports quote-unquote multi-touch, but it only tracks two fingers. And so existing Mac users or existing, well, even Android, iOS tablet users, you know, like start putting their fingers on the screen and playing with it. And so like,
No, that's too many.
You put 10 fingers on the screen, it picks two that's tracking. And so which two it picks. but to the point though, so we know that Windows RT, of course, will have, you know, it's all Metro, but then there's still, as we discussed a few weeks ago, that desktop mode it can flip into to run Office 15 mm-hmm. and it's Office 15, 14, 15?
15.
I don't even know anymore. So it can, yeah, so it can run Office, it can run these things like in desktop mode. But the question is going to be, so if it's running real Office recompiled for ARM, we know that Windows Metro apps will not allow plugins and drivers and stuff like that, but we don't know what the desktop side. So the question to you, Rodney Medina, from 5 minutes ago is about whether the Imedio Flex will be able to run on the desktop portion of Windows RT to put those Office profiles in.
Yeah, we could, because from a programmatic point of view, it's just another processor architecture you need to compile your code to. But it's all dependent of what they allow through the store. I mean, if you look at the success, the way, I mean, from a consumer point of view, I'm a real iPad user. And the nice thing of an iPad is that it doesn't get unstable because of the applications you install, because it's pretty much isolated as what you can do as a vendor or an ISV. And yeah, and also the power usage and so on. So it's really dependent of what they allow through the store, because they want to have a stable tablet, I assume, as soon as they are really want to go head-to-head with the iPad in the future.
And so a question, and this is something, Jack, we had that conversation yesterday with Ryan. Tell me his last name. Ryan.
Kellenberg?
Let me see here. Ryan, Kellenberg. Ryan,
you
sorry.
Guys are good at this.
So from Watch Docs. And Watch Docs, I guess Jack will talk about them on Thursday. They do sort of a DRM around files you can sort of copy around. But we were asking if they were going to be able to build a client for or integrate with the DRM features of Office on Windows RT. And he's like, we don't even know if Office on Windows RT is going to support DRM.
And meanwhile, it's coming out in 6 months.
Yeah. And I said, what does Microsoft say? And they're like, I don't even think they know that that's a question that people are going to ask.
The strange thing I can add is that one of our developers visited the Windows Build Conference for developers last year, and they had the ARM-based tablets up there. But like when the show started that week, they all of a sudden decided that no one could even touch the devices. So they were just standing there behind the glass, and the developers were not even able to play around with it.
Were they real, or was it just did they take an iPad and like put a color form with the Windows logo on it, like a screenshot of Windows that they ran in the photo gallery and said, look at how sexy these new Windows tablets are.
Yeah, because the RT tablets will be more they will have better battery life than the Intel based versions. They will have a slimmer look than the Intel devices. So the thing I'm wondering is, as soon as those Intel tablets and the RT tablets will hit the stores, is that people will just look at the description, at the label, and they will say, hey, this one has 10 hours battery life, and it looks cooler. I'm going to buy the RT version. And then you come home, and you feel just as limited as buying an iPad, because you can't do anything on the device what's not in the Microsoft store.
Right, so, and the person at MediaMarkt or Best Buy here in the States, they're not going to know the difference between Windows RT and Windows 8. Yeah.
Well, right, it's going to be irrelevant.
Do we even know that RT is going to come out at the same time as 8? I mean, we've been assuming this, I think, but do we even know that that's the case? I know Jack had just mentioned that, you know, it's 6 months away, but maybe it's not. You know, maybe it's a year away, and maybe that's why those conversations haven't been had yet with Microsoft about whether Office would have DRM and that kind of a thing, because maybe it isn't even on the radar. Maybe the focus is on get 8 out, and then we'll deal with RT and ARM versions of applications and stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's looking like so VentureBeat's saying there's no date yet for this is a new article from right now that they don't have the date of either, it looks like.
Well, Windows 8 was always, the general consensus was late 2012, I think. So, but I don't know that I've even heard such a vague date for WOA or RT.
So the other thing about, the problem with Windows RT, of course, also is that no one has it. So people have, because remember, Windows RT will not be available as downloadable software. It'll only come prepackaged on these ARM-based tablets and, you know, phones and laptops and stuff. So right now, all these developers...
They need to make it available for developers, because otherwise they launch it and no software will be available. Well,
that's what I mean.
What's a man without his apps, I guess.
Yeah, and that's one of the other things too that just leads me to believe that maybe RT isn't going to be out for a while because because the developers don't have it yet, they're not going to have too many titles at launch. But they did mention, I thought, that Metro apps would be compatible regardless of what the underlying platform was. So you know, if you're developing, if you're developing for Metro now, it'll run on RT as well.
It depends on what code you're writing. So if it's going to be HTML type of code you're using for your Metro app, then it will work out of the box. But if you're doing more heavy duty developing on C++, for instance, then you really need to compile it towards the different devices in the App Store for Microsoft.
Yeah, and Microsoft has said that they want to make it easy for developers to compile. So they want to make it so that if a developer is writing a Metro app, that they can just write it once and then compile it twice, once for x86 and once for ARM. But every developer I've talked to, and Rodney, you tell me this, that's one of those things that looks good on paper, but inevitably you take your existing project and then push the compile for ARM button and see 47, you know, exclamation marks of why it's not going to work, and spend the next between 5 minutes and 7 weeks trying to figure out what the hell this
is. I think it will be a little bit the same when developing an application for the iPad or the iPhone. There will be two applications in the App Store, and some of the applications are not visible on the other device which doesn't support it. I think it will be some sort of deal like that. Yeah.
So the other sort of controversial thing around Windows RT, and this is something that you were seeing in the questions in the chat room. Windows RT, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about who Microsoft is targeting that towards. Is it going to be targeted towards consumers? Which I don't know how the hell they. I mean, flat out, how they're going to be an iPad is beyond me. Especially when an iPad has 50 million per quarter of production volume, and you have this like amazing device. Like Microsoft can't build iPads, or I should say the Microsoft partners, Acer and HP and them, they can't build something as sexy as the iPad and sell it at profit. And nor can they afford to sell it at a loss because all the App Store stuff goes to Microsoft, not to them. And no consumer, is your grandmother going to buy? I mean, what consumer in their right mind, besides, because if you hate Apple, you probably hate Microsoft too, and you've already got your Android tablet that you've hacked and put open source software on. So
unless you're Benny,
a Windows on ARM tablet seems like something that like your weird cousins from another state that you only visit every now and then would be like. Yeah, I knew somebody that had one of those.
Oh, yeah, it's gonna be like my LA Gear Air shoes that I had in sixth grade. We had, it was like when Nike Airs came out. Paul, what kind of shoes did you have?
Reebok pumps.
Paul had Reebok pumps. Damn.
Oh,
you're an only child,
lucky.
Divorced
bastard.
Parents, man. Reebok pumps.
All right, Milhouse.
But I had LA Gear Airs. And I feel like, so I felt like such a badass going to school that day because my shoes had little windows on the side. But like clear rubber, in the back. But I'm sure that WinRT is...
I think the advantage Microsoft has is that they have more of an open mind towards hardware vendors, so there will be more options available from a lot of people are sort of screaming for a smaller iPad, and Microsoft will just hand that over to all the vendors that bought themselves into the RT platform, I guess. So there will be more options, but the success will be, will there be enough sexy applications available in the Microsoft Store?
It's
I think that's the whole deal.
Yeah, but look, there's already over 50 Android tablets on the market today. 50 different models of the Android tablet. Quickly, name five.
Yeah.
This is open question to everyone.
Samsung, WizBang, whatever
Galaxy.
It is.
Yeah.
Galaxy, is that a tablet?
Galaxy Tab. I forget what the Asus one is.
There's
Acer
a Transformer or something.
Yeah, the Asus Transformer Prime. That's
look, we got five
like
of us here. We got five of us like tech nerds here. Can't fucking name five out of 50.
Flippy the Clown names Zoom.
Asus doesn't count. That's a company. You can't just name companies that may or may not make tablets.
What are you talking about? Zoom is a tablet?
No, I'm saying the next one that says Asus underneath.
Okay. Yeah. But the Kobe Kairos. Lepan TC.
I'm sure I walked by many of them at the Consumer Electronics Show.
Yeah, you see my point here is that this is what Microsoft have to look forward to.
This is sick. There's so many companies that I've never even heard of before that have.
And so, but to say that, all the world is waiting for. Meanwhile, while we had this conversation, in the past 15 seconds, Apple sold another 50,000 iPads. Do the math. I bet you that's actually accurate. And so this is, and by the way, there's a million. How many apps in the App Store? Like 3 million apps or whatever. So anyway, but so.
You know what? Will you be – because right now I think you can go into a Walgreens, into a drugstore, and buy a passive matrix TFT screen $79 Android tablet. And I think that's the ultimate rock bottom for any technology, right? And so I think that that's where we're going to end up seeing Windows RT.
It's like when DVD players started being like $30. Yeah. But so the question that brings up, and I don't want to open this can of worms again, but maybe everybody will head to these Windows RT tablets because you don't need to buy a companion device license for them to access VDI environments.
Well, so okay, that's a good point. No.
Okay.
Because look, okay, so let's back up here. So so Microsoft announced as part of MMS, they announced their plans for Windows 8. They announced some licensing changes, and I'm going to just put these
Did you find that? Yeah, I got it
here. The license change, you know, this is the thing, and I guess to recap, and it sounds like such a crazy thing. So everyone knows that you need SSA. So first of all, Microsoft licenses Windows based on device, not based on users. So if you have 1,000 users in your company, that is in no way related to the number of Windows licenses you need. It's how many devices you have in your company. But now, so every device that connects into your Windows environment, if it's like a VDI environment or terminal server or VMs, every different device needs a license. But of course, they realize, but then if users go home, well, wait, so you got to buy a license for like every random computer, internet kiosk, friend's machine that a user buys. And so then Microsoft says, oh, okay, if the company has a device that the user uses on a regular basis for work and that machine is licensed, then if a user is outside the office and uses other devices, okay, they can just kind of ride in on that first one. But they defined it, and this is how it's been now for the past 5 years, but they defined it based on so if your user's primary device at work is licensed, when the user goes out into the world, they can use whatever they want sort of on that same license. But if they're at work, it has to be licensed. So a user using whatever devices the users use in the office, on premises, they say, I believe, has to have, like, the company has to buy a license for it. But then that's a weird thing that Nathan Cotino from CDW pointed out to us, where he said, if a user has an iPad at home and they connect to your VDI desktop from home, you don't need an additional license. But if they walk through the door of the company, then you need to buy a license for that iPad?
Yeah.
And the answer is yes. You have to buy a VDA license for that. And then it's like, well, wait, what if they have a phone and an iPad, and they use one for 5 minutes, the next for 5 minutes. Like, yeah, these all require licenses.
Yeah, each one's a device.
But
separate,
it's like,
license.
How the hell the company, which is crazy, because in today's world, you know, the whole point of this whole virtualization thing is, oh, just focus on delivering Windows to your users and don't worry about the devices. But Microsoft still wants you to worry about the devices, but only when they're at work. And so clearly,
this is why it's so confusing. I mean, this is why what I say. You call Microsoft 10 different times and ask them about licensing, and you'll get 11 different answers.
Yeah,
I mean, because of all of this, how could you possibly do it right?
So so clearly this is asinine. So Microsoft, in order to solve this, that's where they create. So the new change for Windows 8 licensing is they introduced a brand new license called the Companion Device License, the CDL. And what this license, it's for the scenario I just mentioned. So it's an add-on on top of SA or VDA. So if you have scenarios where you're buying SA, your primary devices are licensed, users are out in the world and they can, you know, use whatever devices they want, but then when they come into the company, into your work office, it's like, oh my God, I got to track these things. You can buy this CDL to say, now whatever the users use in the company is going to be like that's okay. You don't need an extra license for that, because that sort of takes those extended roaming rights that you got outside your company and applies them also to inside the company
for the arbitrary number of 4 devices,
right? Which, yeah, so if a user has 5 personal devices, and how the hell are you supposed to know that, again, is beyond me.
You gotta buy 2 CDLs.
As a commenter said, you just have to inform company security to check everyone if they have an iPad. I'm assuming that's when they come in the door. But technically,
walking in the door doesn't mean you need the license. It's not until you access your VDI desktop. So, but here's the crazy thing, though. So, first of all, no one can fucking know what is what. So, companies who are afraid of being audited, what are they going to do? They're going to buy a CDL for all their users, you know? Just to like kind of play it safe. And so really what we had is like a stealth price increase of SA you know, so they say, hey, you could, it's like a protection racket, you know, like, you know, you could track all us individually, or for a few bucks extra per user per year, maybe we look the other way for this.
Now, yeah, this is like promising not to introduce new taxes and just raising the old ones.
Now, here's where it gets asinine crazy. As if this isn't bad enough so far. With Windows RT, so what Microsoft announced is that remember the CDL, all the stuff, it only applies to personally owned devices. So if the company buys a user an iPad, and the company has the asset tag, and the company owns that iPad, that device has to have the Windows license, the VDA license, regardless. Because the thought is the company can track that, and they know how many they buy. And if the company buys an iPad and has that license, then you can use it wherever you are, in the company, out of the company, doesn't matter. So this is only for personal devices that users are buying on their own, or that are borrowed or non-company-owned devices. So so this whole CDL thing is to cover personal devices and work, but now where it gets really shady is Microsoft said now if that personal device is running Windows RT, then Windows RT is going to have this VDA, an extended VDA license they call it, to create a new one. It'll have that license built in. So basically, if your users are going out and on their own buying Windows RT tablets, when they bring those Windows RT tablets into the office, you do not need to buy a CDL. Now, let's talk about all the ways that that's fucked up. So, so first of all, tracking nightmare, because this is, again, now it's like, okay, so I got to track which devices. But if you have an iPhone and a Windows RT tablet and, like, you're supposed to track and the user walks in the door, it's like, okay, if you access your device from this, it's okay. But if you use your iPhone, I know it's just a web page, you can push it and it connects right up. But technically, you owe us $30 if you do that. That's kind of goofy. The second
thing, you know damn well Microsoft is going, hey, no, this is simpler.
Well, they fucking said that in the release. They said this is, like, you know, we heard our customers and want to clarify and simplify enterprise licensing. But then then the next thing is that so remember, this only applies to devices that are non-company owned. So, Jack, to your point, when you're
saying,
is this going to encourage, now if companies are buying tablets, then they can say, hey, instead of buying iPads for all of our users, let's buy Windows RT for all of our users.
Right. So, of course, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It needs it needs VDA
they
anyway.
Need a full VDA anyway. So it doesn't matter there. And users on their own, I mean, let's be real. When that user walks into Best Buy, you think they're going to be like, well, if I buy this Windows device, and the company can't even, like, say, we'll give you a rebate or a bonus, because that's the company acknowledging they're keeping track of it, which means they have to buy full VDA for it. So, and not to mention,
Is that true though? Is it just for personal for RT? Because I read that as RT. If you have RT and your corporate and your main PC at the workplace has SA, that the fact that you have RT is enough, whether it's personal or
that is true. Owned. That is true. So you're right. So in terms of companies buying these devices for the users,
they're gonna buy them for everybody.
Well, right, they can buy Windows RT and not have to buy a separate VDA like they would with an iPad, which now means – so now you have to pay – there's an iPad tax, essentially. All this shit that, like, Citrix and Quest and VMware talks about, you know, look how we can deliver Windows apps to iPads and Androids and all that kind of stuff. You're going to have to pay $119 per year more if you're delivering those to those tablets
to non-Windows RT devices.
But why this is so messed up, though, is because – so if – like, I could understand if Windows RT was like a full version of Windows and users can install applications. And it's like, well, you know, you're already buying the Windows experience, so what's the difference here? But remember, Windows RT is not. You can't arbitrarily install applications. It's only Windows Metro applications, which are your multi-touch, you know, non-like sort of huge enterprise apps. So this is where I talk about – like antitrust in the article. And a lot of people say, well, hey, it's a free country. They can do whatever they want. Microsoft is a company. It's capitalism. But they can't do whatever they want. Non-monopoly laws exist. And that's why the Justice Department went after Microsoft. And so, 15 years ago or whatever that was. So that makes the fact that Windows RT gets a free pass when all the other ones don't, that just seems super shady.
Who knows if that kind of thing can stand up. I mean, I guess you could say you could draw to applications or something like that, saying, well, look, you know, Apple, you know, this application only comes on a Mac. They're not making them write it for Windows. But I don't know. It's I guess it, no matter what, even if it is shady, even if it is illegal, it's not going to be solved anytime soon. You know, that took years and years to draw out the whole Internet Explorer thing from whatever 10 or 15 years ago. God, that was 15, wasn't it? So yeah, regardless of that, it's still shady.
From a company perspective, I really hope that all the IT pros out there realize that getting a Windows RT tablet for all the users will be the same management nightmare as an iPad. I mean, well, can I install my license monitor? Yeah, it's an unmanaged device. That's also what Brian stated earlier today, I guess, about no group policies, no membership of the domain, and so on. Because I think it's really going to be focused on the consumer market. At least I hope, because otherwise you will have the same struggles deploying applications to your iPad users that people now have.
Now, along those lines of it not Windows RT not having domain joins and not having group policy access, there's an interesting conversation on Slashdot, and the poster, it seems like this is actually posted as like a spam type of thing, and the article is actually the article that this conversation is based around, the Slashdot links to, is a pretty uninformed article that misses a lot of key points, but nevertheless it's the conversations are good, and the question is basically they say, well, hey, maybe Microsoft just ran out of time with Windows RT and didn't have time to build the Active Directory support and group policy support and everything. And my belief, and I'm working on an article for this for BrianMadden.com, but my belief is that it's not that they ran out of time; it's flat out that domain joins and group policy represents the old way of managing. So we talk about sort of managing the device versus managing the personality or the applications on the device. And this is a conversation like look at app virtualization versus, you know, SMS or System Center, or look at managing, like delivering apps and data versus like pushing out patches and owning the device. Or even in Jack, like in your space, like mobile device management, MDM versus mobile application management, MAM. And so I'm wondering that, you know, the whole concept of what you got to do with group policy and all the owning this device and locking it down, you know, there's ways around that. I mean, iPads and Android devices can be controlled with policy, and there's applications to enforce, you know, remote device wiping and password enforcement and encryption and that kind of stuff. So maybe it's that group policy and Active Directory are sort of like the old school back when you're managing devices, not managing users kind of thing. And this represents a break from the past, an opportunity for Microsoft to manage. Like maybe WinRT is only going to be managed with like Windows Intune and Exchange Active Sync and that kind of stuff, rather than having like all the muck that is you know, domain management and domain-based group policy. So
I mean, that could be, but there's actually Azure Active Directory now, Active Directory running in the cloud.
But let me ask.
That's a recent announcement.
Let me ask, though, why? And is the reason for Active Directory in the cloud so that you can have your the directory that actually controls system management coming from the cloud? Or is it more of like Microsoft wants to allow for cloud-based identity management? I don't mean identity management like single sign-on and all that, but like every company has to have a master directory somewhere of like, here's all my users, here's their names, here's their passwords. And now AD in Azure allows that to happen in the cloud. But like, you know, because to me, Active Directory, and this is where in the notes of this show, as we sort of prepare for the show, there's a Google Doc that we all share that's like our talking points. And I wrote in there just before the show started, I made a note called Screw AD. And Gabe was like,
what's that?
And I kind of said,
what ad don't you like?
but because what I'm thinking is like, because to me, Active Directory is kind of an anachronistic now. I mean, it's.
Why is that?
Because so if you look at what we really need, so Active Directory, it did a couple of things. It was the actual main enterprise directory that we use, you know, usernames and passwords, but then also manage, you know, all like the computer accounts and group policy stuff, and like, you know, having all these policies applied to what systems can do and what software can be installed and how you can reboot your machine, having all that in the same directory that holds your like actual authenticates users. Blech. So I look
you don't have to do all of that stuff. I mean,
where else would I manage my machines? Well, right. You don't have to. And in today's,
there's tons of other ways to manage all that as well.
Exactly. And so, so 10 years ago, 15 years ago, because even back to NT4 system policies, you know, we were managing systems. We were managing computers and saying this computer has this patch and this software and this user and this configuration and all that sort of thing. And as we've seen, especially with the acceleration in the past 5 years, we've seen sort of self-contained apps that have settings like for iOS and Android. And we're seeing with Metro, you know, apps and everything. So we're starting to see that, you know,
I think that you call it Windows touching.
there has to be a master directory somewhere that, as I said, here's a list of people, here's their usernames, here's their passwords. You know, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff has to exist somewhere. But I think we can now decouple that from the systems management configuration, which is kind of like the old school way of doing things. And so if we take – so Microsoft will want to
But not if you're Microsoft. Here's that's the thing. So all of this stuff. I mean, Microsoft is still, you know, they're hell bent on still managing these devices and all of this stuff, and that's the System Center and all of that. Now, if you're telling me you can run System Center entirely without AD, that's fine, but without all the management components, and you still need AD for all the authentication and the authorization and all of that, then that's fine. I can subscribe to that, but in no way do I think Microsoft is abandoning this.
Okay, so
it's saying screw AD.
And maybe we say this like it's like screw desktop management, but you know how we discuss how the word desktop actually means a lot of different things. It's the UI, it's the hardware, it's the security container, it's the identity container, it's the app runtime, all that kind of stuff.
Again, so, Microsoft is not going to be the first one to launch into that.
But here's what's interesting though. Microsoft's SQL Server business is bigger than their Windows business now. And so SQL Server has a really good authentication system. If you just need lists of users and passwords and some way to authenticate people against that, I mean, you're using SQL. You're not using AD. And so I wonder if sort of long-term for Microsoft, them getting AD into Azure allows that to provide sort of identity. Again, I don't want to call it identity management. I want to call it like authorization, you know, like master.
Well, it would be like federation. I mean, imagine if all... if everybody had some sort of, if all of the SaaS services and applications out there were based in Azure, right? And if everybody subscribed to the Active Directory from Azure, now all of a sudden all of that stuff is there, and you've got federation with anybody that you need federation with for authorization, and you've got access to all these applications that's already just built in, and you don't have to worry about it.
Well,
if that's not Microsoft trying to make it easier for that kind of thing to happen.
Agreed.
I don't know that that's a home run, you know, proposition, but I think that that's where that is initially.
Well, look at OAuth and how OAuth is just exploded. OAuth was only invented a couple years ago, and how it's exploded like fucking everything now. Like, I just set up a Pinterest account for my personal life, not for work, and you can't even – you have to log in with Facebook or Twitter. Remember how 2 years ago, like, every single startup – they all run on Amazon Web Services in the cloud, because like now startup buying hardware, they're like, wow, what year is this? Now it's like startup, like, fuck, we're running user authentication. God damn, no. Everyone has a Facebook at the Twitter account.
My mom has a Twitter account just so she can use Pinterest.
And so but it's kind of the same thing. Like OAuth and SAML and these kind of standards for authentication and authorization across, you know, in federated ways are really taking off. But getting that out of, like, if you have a corporate enterprise on-premises Active Directory, setting up like that to become an OAuth provider to the world is really goddamn difficult. It's not just push it button and forget it. Whereas if the AD is moved into the cloud, that can be one of the things you check the tick box in the, you know, in the GUI and say enable OAuth for my users, and then off you go.
Apparently support that.
I'm sorry?
It does support that, apparently.
Yeah, just like it supported Active Directory Federation services, like all these things were. You mean in the Azure version?
Azure Active Directory supports OAuth. It supports SAML, both versions. They're positioning it as, I think, another one of these, web-based or web-wide, I guess I should say, authentication platforms. So I can't talk today.
So that's where I'm looking. So for Active Directory. So what we use Active Directory for today, so that everything we're talking about and what they're taking to Azure, like, I'm on board, makes sense. And yeah, Microsoft will provide that, Facebook will provide it, Google will provide it, You know, mm-hmm. Active Directory is their legacy, so it will be some form of Active Directory. I'm fine with that. The part of when I say screw AD, I mean this whole concept of like all of your machines are domain joined, and you have like you know all these different you know stuff configured in Active Directory, and your groups and computer groups, and you're applying policy and all that. Like doing that from the systems manager AD standpoint, that to me seems kind of old school. So tying back to Windows RT not being able to be domain joined, I'm thinking is irrelevant now.
But it is old school, but running Windows desktop applications is also old school. But the problem is people are using legacy and they've really bought themselves into that like 15 years ago. And one of my customers, as an example, has 90,000 desktops running Windows 7 now, but they have thousands of desktop applications, and all those a lot of those applications tie into the Active Directory structure. That's just the way that has been built the last couple of years, and especially for those organizations, this is really like very distant future for them.
But it's interesting. So this is an interesting space to watch, though, and it's funny how we always joke how those of us who are sort of desktop people and applications people, now we have to get into thinking about security and server virtualization and storage. And frankly, user authentication and user authorization, identity management, that's really falling within our sort of bailiwick as well, as some of these other things. So I guess it just makes our job that much more difficult. Incidentally, in the chat, a couple people are asking about how things like go to my PC, log me in, et cetera, work with this new Microsoft licensing. And that was actually something that was brought up in the comments of the article. So those things work, all of these remote access solutions. So first of all the stuff we talk about, like you needing SA and VDA, these are only when you're connecting to remote virtual desktops, so VDI and stuff like that. If you've got a physical desktop computer, then the Microsoft license, and this is even whether you buy the retail version of Windows, mm-hmm. whether it's Windows Pro, if you've got a physical desktop computer, you are allowed to connect to it remotely for the purposes of working remotely, troubleshooting, et cetera. So if I have a laptop, I mean, I can buy a desktop computer, pop it under my desk, and use it as my primary computer via log me in all day long with the regular Microsoft retail pay once license and buy it once
from wherever you want on whatever device you want.
Exactly.
Right.
The key is, though, when you do that, though, that license is locked to that hardware. So you can't, the reason people use VDI is because you want to put this in the data center and do, different load balancing and turning Windows on and off only when you need it, and you're redirected to a different server over here and it's failing over to another site and all that kind of stuff. So you can't take that copy of Windows. If you have a copy of Windows that's licensed and locked to a specific piece of hardware, then you are able to remotely access it via, log me in and all of those kinds of things. So the anonymous saying, so then brokering to physical PC via Zen Desktop does not require VDA/SA. That is a true statement. And that's also...
And in that regard, nothing has changed. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's right. That's how it's been for the past 5 or 10 years. And that's actually what we thought at first that the online was doing. And I guess we still don't 100% know what they're doing, although they have seemed to switch over to using server instead of client OS. Anyway, so we're kind of running up on the end of our hour. Some of the topics that we might talk about, Jack, I think you should talk about on your show on Thursday. Like you did an article saying who's Citrix going to buy?
Yeah, and that brought up some interesting arguments about whether Citrix would want a solution that really does the hardcore app wrapping and inspection, or a lighter mobile app store and a distribution thing. And there were some interesting comments, and then one of the vendors responded with a blog post of their own, so we'll talk about all that on Thursday.
Okay, so that's on Thursday. You'll talk about Watch Docs on Thursday. You'll talk about your week at MMS,
and the supposed application management that comes from Windows Intune for mobile devices.
So when they announced that last year, I emailed a friend of mine that works for the company I used to work at when I had a real job, and asked him. He's like the head security guy there, and I asked him, "What do you think about Intune?" And he didn't know what it was. So I explained to him desktop management from the cloud, and his only response to me was, "I just threw up in my mouth."
And he's a security guy, though. So,
well, but you know, it's got to get past these guys. So, you know, before it takes off. And so, I think that that's the problem. I think Intune's going to have across the board is getting buy-in by the security personnel. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, now that they can do all of these things, you know, now that they have the app management and mobile management and that kind of a thing built into them, you know, maybe that makes them a little bit more appealing.
So the this guy who's saying, by the way, back to the chat room, just buy a bunch of cheap PCs and stack them in your data center. Yes. And, and in fact, you can do a VM still, too. I mean, you are allowed to run, if you can buy retail licenses even and connect to them remotely, and they can run as a VM. The only thing is they can never – they have to be tied to specific users, and they can never move between servers. But that's an argument. I mean, the idea of buying a bunch of cheap PCs and just stacking them in the data center, we talked about that. I mean, I that's fine. Of course, you've got the same issues of failure and everything. Like if a hard drive fails, then the user loses stuff. But hey, at least it's in your data center this time instead of, you know, out in the field somewhere. So yeah, if you just need VDI, or pardon me, if you just need remote access and you don't want to deal with brokers and all that kind of crap, I mean, you know, I don't know. I have no problem with buying a stack of $300 Dell PCs and just stacking them in the data center. Maybe it's not the most efficient for power and it's not the most efficient for moving users around, but it works and you don't need any licenses for it.
Yeah, exactly.
So events coming up. I am down a week from yesterday. I will be in San Diego speaking at TEC, the Experts Conference, apparently TEC it stands for. I'm giving the keynote there talking about desktop virtualization and consumerization. Then the following week, Citrix Synergy is here in San Francisco. That's the 9th, 10th, and 11th of May.
Are you speaking there?
I am. I did not submit any sessions, which is kind of out of laziness rather than any sort of particular protest this time. But it's their session, like their call for papers was in like October or something like that. And I'm like, well, shit, I don't even know what is going to exist in October. I mean, what's going to be the hot topic on people's minds? But I did get a Geek Week slot. I think I said I'd talk about VDI something. I don't even know. And Laura actually, I never sent her an abstract. Laura Whalen from Citrix, who sort of like is the, you know, cat herder for all of us CTPs. And she finally gave up asking me. So I don't know what's on the agenda. So I'm doing something there. So Gabe, you'll be out here for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I have not been notified of speaking at anything. But last time in Barcelona, I was notified the day before both of my panels that I was on. So who knows? I will be there, though, one way or another.
And then we've got the following week, May 17th. I'm speaking here in San Francisco, also on the topic of desktop virtualization. And then the next day I hop on the plane and we go to London, where we have Briform, which is taking place 23rd and 24th of May. Registration is now open for Briform. Agenda is posted. We are working out all of those details. And Briform, incidentally, for Briform in the U.S. taking place in July, our call for papers window is still open. So we've been getting a couple of submissions per day for that, and you still got time to get sessions in for another
May
weeks.
25th.
Yes, yeah, so got like another month of that. So anyway, I think that's all I have. There's a whole lot of things that I'm really looking forward to your show, Jack. Consumerization Nation with Jack Madden and Colin Steele, the two most brilliant names in the industry. And as I said, the most brilliant names in the industry, not the most brilliant people in the industry. So you guys can
we're working on that part.
So Jack, I'm looking forward to your show on Thursday. Rodney Medina, thank you so much for taking the time to call in today, and thank you for taking the time out of your evening to join us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
And for setting the record straight. So so we can definitely add Immedia to the list of companies that are not very threatened by UEV.
I'll try to show you on Thursday. We'll handle it offline.
We've got a date for Thursday, and we'll see you
next month in London.
At Briform, yep. All right. Well, Gabe, as always, thank you so much for joining. Thanks to Paul for coming in. Hope it's worth your free lunch. And... to all of you, of course, thank you so much for listening from San Francisco. This is Brian Madden, Brian and Gabe Live. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.